No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBSRadioone, BBS Radio 1. Tonight, we have a special show with a couple of very special guests. First up is John Kaiser, who's been a union organizer in Iowa for many years and who helped us navigate the Iowa caucuses so that we could get resolutions passed in support of D.C. statehood. And then we're going to have, on the second half of the show, Mary Claire Riley, who ran a project, an art project here in Washington, where she did a walking tour that revolved around statehood and brought people from all over the country who were here for a conference to learn about D.C. statehood. So the show's kind of going to be about friends that we have across America who are helping us. And speaking of friends, let me introduce my friend, co-host, and brilliant commentarian, Maria Sanchez. How are you, Maria?
I'm excellent. Aren't you sweet? Thank you, Michael, so much. How was your week?
Good. We've gotten a lot accomplished. And before we get on to John, introducing John and talking about the wonderful work he's done, let me say that we now just found out that the Hawaiian Senate, prior to the caucuses, which are early next month, have introduced a concurrent resolution in support of D.C. statehood.
So really?
Thanks, friends in Hawaii. Yeah, you know, Hawaii and Alaska were the last two states. They came in together, and we've been talking to people in both states, and they're very, very supportive. But the Hawaiian Senate, just on their very own, decided to do that, and that's great.
So it's done? It's accomplished? It's been...
Well, I think they're voting on it tomorrow. We just found out about it, and they list it as kind of a done deal, but they list it as passing on February 22nd, which is tomorrow. So I guess they're assuming it's going to pass. There are several co-sponsors to the resolution, and so I guess they're assuming it's going to pass. They've done similar resolutions in the past, so we won't know till tomorrow. But that's exactly the way it looks. So
good for you, Michael.
Yeah, that's great news. And with us is John Kaiser, who we went to Iowa. We tried to get resolutions passed at the caucuses in Iowa. John was instrumental in getting that done, not only because he belongs to a group called Iowans for D.C. Statehood, but because he took us all over the place. And as a longtime union organizer, he knew everybody. And you know how it is, Maria, when you walk into a room of people you don't know. If you walk in with a guy you know that everybody knows, all of a sudden you're accepted. Are you with us, John?
Yes, I am.
Well, you did a great job, and thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, John, since I haven't met you, hello. I just wanted to say hi. And I was curious, would you give us a brief review of what your career has been like to this point? Would you mind that, Michael?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Well, there's not a whole lot to tell. I was born in Chicago. We moved to Wisconsin when I was in high school. We moved to Des Moines, Iowa in 1967. I graduated from high school here in Des Moines, went on to Iowa State University for a couple years, went in the service. I was one of those Vietnam people, and then I came back and joined the Painters Union. And I was in there, one of those terrible union thugs they talk about. I was able to retire from the union at 55 years of age because I had all my time in with a full retirement. And I managed to stay on as a retiree member. And I still do a lot of their political activities. Have for 20 plus years been working. I worked my way up to a business rep for a short while and the political director for the local here in Des Moines, and pretty much travel through the Midwest helping the union, the Painters Union, do whatever activities they've got.
So are you considered a volunteer, or is that a paid position, what you do now?
I'm strictly a volunteer.
Wow.
Well,
following your passion.
And let me tell you, one thing, I got to know John a little bit by going around with him, and this is a truly humble man. Let me tell you, he tells you that it's not such a big deal, but it really is a big deal. And, you know, when you walk into a room with a guy and people come up to him, you know that you're there with somebody that's very well respected. And John was certainly that. Let me ask you, John, how did you get involved with Iowans for D.C. Statehood? I mean, you know, we have a problem in D.C. That we can't resolve ourselves. We really need people like you involved, but it's hard to get people involved. So how did you get involved in it?
Well, it kind of, it isn't too far roundabout. I think you or Senator Strauss contacted a lady here in Des Moines by the name of Tamara Harrison.
Yes, she's amazing.
She's the director of the Polk County Democrats. And being a member of that and having been on the executive board of the Polk County Democrats, of course, we all stay in touch constantly. And she approached me with the idea that this is something that we really need to look into. And I thought, I guess I really didn't realize you guys didn't have a vote when you went to the Senate. I just assumed you were part of it instead of more or less, what, a lobbyist type, more than a voting type.
Yep.
And that didn't make sense to me. Those people don't have any representation, and it's only fair that they should have. And I told her whatever I could do to help, just let me know. And she contacted me a week before you came out to Des Moines and said you people needed somebody to drive you around and show you what was going on and get you places. And as you said, I know a lot of people, so I agreed. Gave up my right to be in my own caucus to help out you guys. And
wow.
I was more than happy.
So are
to
you
do
new
it.
To the cause, John?
Yeah, I've only been involved for, actually a couple months now since Tamara approached me with this information. And like I say, I guess I didn't realize you didn't get votes. And that's, that doesn't sit with me. I think everybody should have, should have the right to representation.
Yeah, and that's, and that's our big problem. And that's why John was so effective. At the particular caucus that I was at, Maria, for example, they voted on our resolution to support D.C. statehood as a standalone resolution. Sometimes in these caucuses, I understand, and John can correct me if I'm wrong because he really knows the process well, they approve all the resolutions by acclamation. You know, they group them all together. But in the particular caucus that I was at, they asked that the resolution be read and voted on separate from other resolutions, and they passed it unanimously, not one dissenting vote. And when people left the church that I was in, I stayed at the back of the church and thanked them, of course, and gave them buttons and stuff. And every single person said to me, of course, this is the way it should be. Huh. This is ridiculous. Every one of them. I mean, I was amazed. Really nice people in Iowa, by the way.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, they are. Like
the salt of the earth.
Yes, very, very nice.
We're kind of known as Iowa Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
We enjoy having all the politicians come out. You know, we've been fortunate enough to be number one in the nation for our caucus. And the TV ads, as can be expected, kind of get a little old after a while. But to have everybody come out here and get to meet them face-to-face, it's a pleasure. It really is. It's a lot of fun.
I would imagine it's really sexy. I mean, everybody shows you all the love.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's how they treat you, Maria. They treat you like they invited you over to their house for dinner. I mean, everybody. The cops talk to you. The people that run the... we sat in one restaurant all afternoon one day, you know, talking to people and sipping on coffee, and nobody rushes you out, or nobody, you know what I mean? I mean, they're very hospitable. It's just amazing to me. And I think, and I've heard, John, please give me your opinion on this. I've heard that this is not unusual, but there was one caucus, Democratic caucus, where Hillary and Bernie tied, and they flipped a coin to decide who won. In Washington, D.C., you would have had lawyers involved, you would have had people screaming at each other, but to me, to say, look, it's a tie, so it really doesn't make any difference, right? Whichever one, you know, let's choose a winner, let's all get along. That amazed me. I don't think you could do that in Washington, D.C. And I understand that's not unheard of in Iowa.
Actually, it happened in several caucuses. If there's what we are doing when we have our caucus is assigning delegates onto the county convention. And if there's an uneven number of delegates, let's just use the number 7, and there's a tie between the two parties, each one's going to get 3, and you've got that odd one to figure out who to send it to. And when they're exactly even, you know, there's only one way to, well, there's more than one way. You flip a coin. I've seen them take a deck of cards out, lay them out, whoever draws high card. I don't think they've ever done rock, paper, scissors, but I suppose that is a possibility, too. Whatever the two groups, the chairs of the two groups decide on as far as breaking the tie, that's how we do it. So
you don't,
you know,
regroup
kind of luck
and
of the
people
draw.
Make new presentations and try to persuade folks to cross over to the aisle? You just agree that it's a tie?
No, they do that.
We've already done that part of it. Right. What we do is on the Democratic side, on the Democrats, we go in and we break into preference groups. And in this case, there were three possible groups. You had the Bernie Sanders people, the Hillary Clinton people, and the Martin O'Malley people. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to have 15% of the total number of people. Let's use another round number. Let's just use 100. Okay, so you have to have at least 15 people in your group to be viable.
Okay.
Okay, if you don't have 15, that's the first count. And if you don't have that, then you stop, you look at each other, then they give you another half hour, and that's when you try to get those people to come to your group.
Okay.
Or you try and get people out of the other groups to come to you to make you viable. And when it's 50-50 tie, and in this case it was Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton people, nobody's going to leave one of those groups to go to the other one to try and break the tie.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we just do it the nice way. There's no arguing about it. You flip a coin or draw a card or however you decide you want to do it.
So and, there you go, Michael. It's two.
Well, you know what? And this is what makes me proud to be a Democrat, Maria. As Will Rogers said, I belong to no organized political movement. I'm a Democrat. They took us in. We went to a training on the first day, and they explained the Republican process, which takes all of about 5 minutes. Then they explained the Democratic process, which takes about an hour for them to explain. The Republicans are very straightforward. They walk in and they vote. It's the Democrats that go through all these machinations and stuff. And it's just so interesting because when they describe it to you, you're thinking to yourself, well, how can that work? You know, but then you go and the people are so nice. And at my caucus, we had two O'Malley people and, you know, they said right away, you know, obviously he's not viable. And the Clinton people and the Sanders people went over there and they talked to him for, you know, like 5 minutes. And then the O'Malley people went, okay. And they went over to Sanders.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know what? In Washington, they would have, you know, that those two O'Malley people would still be sitting there today, 3 weeks later, if it was Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And just to tell you how effective we were, we got 38 resolutions passed just in Polk County, and we got resolutions passed in all 4 congressional districts. And my understanding is that we got both Republicans and Democrats to pass resolutions. Do you know if that's right, John?
That's what I heard. And you brought this up a little earlier about some of the resolutions are just passed on as a whole, then they automatically go up to the county level. And all those other resolutions that are passed will go up there, and then they'll go to the Rules Committee, who will go through everything, and those resolutions will be brought back up on every county level. So I'm going to go out on a limb here. It's not very scary to be out on this big fat limb because I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that it passes on the county level, and I don't think there's going to be one bit of problem.
Well, that's
so that'll
great.
Be Polk County, and then if we can get this start spreading around the rest of the state, because if we can pass it here, we can pass it on to the district and then on to the state convention. And as long as I'm involved, it's going to be pushed all the way up the line.
That's great.
Wow, what an ally you have.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And
yeah.
Talk about grassroots.
Yes. And these guys were so prepared, Maria. We went out there not knowing what was going to happen, you know. And John was at the airport, picked us all up. We got a rental car or two so that we could split up and go in different directions. And he was everywhere, got us there on time. We got to talk to everybody, went around to all the campaign organizations that we could get to. And, yeah, it was really great. It was really great. Plus, it's, you know, it was fun. You know, you need to do it next time, you know, because it's just, as a political junkie, it's also just fun to be there. You know, it's
like
a carnival atmosphere.
Yeah. And there you are involved in the process, too. You're not just an observer. You have an agenda, if you will.
Yes. And it's grassroots politics at its best, don't you think, John? I mean, you've got a lot of political experience. As I say, John's a pretty humble guy, but he's taken a lot of politicians around Iowa. And we traded some great stories while I was out there. So he knows the drill really well. And don't you think, I mean, I just found it just a democracy at its best.
Well, absolutely. It's the foundation of democracy. It's getting the people all involved. And then you got here just in time to have all the media be here. And you saw what it was like in downtown Des Moines at some of those restaurants and stuff where they were just stacked up outside and inside the door waiting for anybody to come walking through to interview. And I don't know, did you even make it over to the media center? I know.
No, I never made it to the media center.
Strauss did.
Yeah, he did. He made it to the media center, but I never made it to the media center. We were busy doing other stuff, but there was so much media everywhere, as you say. We went to the Trump thing at the end of the, was one of the places we stopped on caucus night, and I'd never seen that much media where somebody like the president wasn't there. I mean, we just couldn't believe it, how much media was there, how much he was being covered, and they were just stepping on each other. There were so many people, so many media people there, but yeah, it was, there's like a circus-like atmosphere, but everybody's so nice and so polite that it was really, really a good experience for all of us.
So, John, in terms of the Painters Union, what is it that you continue to promote with your activism with them?
I still just stay on the political side of it. I don't do any organizing as far as trying to get in any members anymore. We need somebody here to help with the political side because our business reps are busy doing everything else that's involved in organizing. The Des Moines local here is part of what they call a district council, and we cover all of Nebraska, all of Iowa, and the counties of Western Illinois that border the Mississippi River along Iowa.
Whoa.
So we have quite a vast territory to travel through to try and promote membership. So I kind of help whenever I can with the political end of it.
And when you say political end, are you talking about specific folks and their campaigns?
Of course, we do the on the national level, our union endorsed Hillary Clinton. And that was kind of a unique system because we used to just call around to our paid staff to see what they'd been hearing. Now we actually do it as a Democratic vote. We send out a magazine every quarter to every member. And this is the last, well, in 2012, we knew we were going to endorse Barack Obama because he was our sitting president. But in 2008 and now in 2016, they sent out a postcard and you sent back in your vote. And Hillary came out. Actually, Hillary won it in 2008, too. We endorsed her in 2008.
What kind of return rate do you get on that?
Probably not as high as we really should. I think I heard it was in the 7 or 8% return rate.
I'm wondering why not an email vote?
Some people, you know, we have a lot of retirees and stuff that don't have email. I mean, you could. You know, it would be okay to the paid staff. You know, obviously they're hooked into it, but they don't have all our emails at the international level, which is there in Washington, D.C. So
we have that problem in Washington, too, with elderly people. Just on local issues, we have that problem sometimes, too, that we send out postcards. Board of Elections sends out postcards. Because so many elderly people in certain parts of the city just don't connect on the internet.
It's funny because my folks who are in their 80s are all over the internet. It's annoying how much, and the texting. I didn't even start texting until my parents started texting me. And I was like, what is this sound that's coming out of my phone? It was my folks sending me texts. It was like, all right, now I have to get into that.
Right, me too. I very often want to say your grandchild is beautiful, but she looks the same last week, you know, this week as she looked last week.
Yes.
But anyway, you know, John, we hope that we get to come back out, at least some of us, for the state convention. I got to tell you, Maria, it was so much fun. I got to, for example, hug and talk to Mike Huckabee, who is a guy that gave a really eloquent answer about statehood on a debate one time with Republicans.
Did he?
Yes, he really did. He just gave the most eloquent response. And, you know, as a Democrat, I don't get to see guys like this, mm-hmm. you know. So we were walking out of the coffee shop one day, and there he was with he and his wife. And I got to tell him thanks for Aww. Being so supportive of us. And,
nice.
And it was great. Well, John, thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a little break here. It looks like we're halfway through the show already. I can't believe it. We're going to bring on Mary Claire in a few minutes, but we hope that we get a chance to come out there for the state convention. When is that, John?
You know what? I'll have to look it up.
No, that's okay.
I'm more concerned with the county convention, which is March the 12th, and then of course, as a delegate to that, then I'll have to lobby myself to be pushed on as a delegate to the district convention, and which I shouldn't have any trouble.
No, I wouldn't think so. I want to, when you decide to run for governor or something, John, I want to be your campaign manager, because it would be a cakewalk. I'll tell you, people love you. And thanks so much for all you've done for us. And we hope you come back to the show again soon. We're going to take a little break here, and then we'll bring Mary Claire on. Thanks again, John.
Well, thank you very much, and have a great day.
You've been very inspirational. Appreciate your grassroots activism.
Well, thank you for calling, and I'm looking forward to you all coming back out here, and you know how to get hold of me. So,
all right. We sure do.
Have and will travel.
All right. So, you're the best. Thank you.
Okay.
Now
get
a song, a quick song from Elton John, and we'll bring Mary Claire on. And we're back with Mary Claire Riley, who is a lovely young woman who, I'll let her explain what she did. But but Mary Claire and I met because of a project that she decided to do. And welcome to the show, Mary Claire. Thanks for being on. And tell us what you did and why you did it.
Okay, well, first, thanks for having me on, and thanks to Senator Brown for joining us 2 weeks ago, I guess it was now.
Yep.
So what I did was we, with collaborators, including you, Senator Brown, and others in D.C., we put on what we called Outside In, Perspectives on D.C. Statehood, a Guided Walk. And I'll just tell the kind of the backstory of you know, you asked why we
yep.
did this. So I am in graduate school. I'm a non-traditional student. My background is in community organizing. But in my late 20s, I started making art. And 20 years later, I decided to go to graduate school and get a Master of Fine Arts. So I'm in my final year. I'm actually in my final semester. But in August, we got a request for proposals that was sent out from the College Art Association, which is an international professional organization for the visual arts. And they have an annual conference. And this year, I think it was the first time in 25 years that they held their annual conference in Washington, D.C. They move around. I think biannually it's in New York City, and then on the off years they go to other cities. So they sent out a request for proposals to artists who use guided walks or walking in their practice, which I'm sure a lot of people will be surprised that that's even a thing. But the use of walking by artists is becoming so prominent that there are actually conferences on the topic, you know, et cetera. So I think, and this is the first time that this particular committee decided to try something like this. They wanted to kind of give conference attendees opportunity to get out into the community, get out of the conference a little, you know, for a little bit of time, get out into the community where the conference was taking place. So I do use guided walks in my art practice. In another collaborative work that I do in Cincinnati, where I live, with people who live and work in a neighborhood called Over the Rhine, just north of downtown. And that's a rapidly changing neighborhood where, because of development efforts that are taking place there, there's now a very diverse population of folks who live there. It's quite a mix of people. But the development is taking place so quickly that relationships across the socioeconomic and racial and other kinds of differences that the development is bringing, the relationships across those differences aren't quite keeping up with the with the demographic and economic changes.
What do you mean by keeping up, Mary Claire? Cooperation versus antagonism, or the other way around?
Or even just folks kind of living in the same space but not necessarily connecting, maybe wanting to connect but not knowing how to connect, not knowing even how to neighbor, much less maybe work together on toward goals, you know, that or identify mutual goals and work together across those differences. There's certainly some of that happening, but there's also a degree to which all of a sudden this mix of people kind of live together but aren't necessarily interacting. So with collaborators there, we developed guided walks where people who live and work in the neighborhood, I formed this sort of core collaborative group of almost a dozen people, and we started meeting. And over time, they shared with each other. They hadn't known each other before. I brought them all together. They shared stories of places in the neighborhood that were important to them, and they designed guided walks based on those places. And we worked together over several months, and then they, and then we held a weekend where those guided walks were offered to other folks who also live and work in the neighborhood. So it's a way for neighbors to get to know each other through sharing stories of the place that they sort of inhabit together. So,
and
anyway,
what was your role in that weekend? You were the facilitator that led up to that weekend, but did you also lead tours?
No, because I don't live there, and so that's an important aspect of my work as an artist, and I think it comes from my background in organizing. Is I'm really interested in as an artist, creating sort of the frame within which the people who are living, whatever the situation is, that's the focus of the work, that those folks voice the work.
Well, I think...
So, within the frame.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. Okay. I think you did a great job with the group you brought together in D.C.,
And before
we go any further, I've looked at your website. Why don't you give your website address so that people are interested in this, they can take a look at your work? Because I think it's a very interesting website.
Okay, thanks. So it's just my name. And so my name is Mary Claire Reitz. Claire is C-L-A-R-E. Reitz is R-I-E-T-Z. And it's just all one word, all lowercase, MaryClaireReitz.com.
I'm sorry, I identified you as Mary Claire Riley because I grew up with a girl named Mary Riley. My next door neighbor was a girl named Mary Riley, and I'm sorry about it. I'm looking at her right here, Mary Claire Reitz.
Yeah,
well,
that's okay.
This is what happens to you when you get old.
I'm right behind you.
You did a great job. But I still have the question of How did you pick D.C. statehood?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I'm giving a lot of backstory. So
No, that's fine.
CAA made this call for proposals for artists who use walks, their guided walks in their work. So I proposed, this was back in August, I think. I thought, Washington, D.C., there's so much, you know, as an outsider, a Midwesterner, born and raised, looking at D.C., I think to myself, Washington, D.C. has so much politics, so much lobbying happening around all these different issues. Would it be interesting to take a single issue and look at it sort of drilling down through three layers of engagement that happen around this issue? So looking at it from the federal level, a more local level, and then sort of individual impact level. Or another way to think about it is policy, advocacy, citizenry. So I made this proposal. The wonderful committee who curated this work, Matt Rappaport, Carissa Carmen, and Natalie Campbell, took a leap of faith and said yes to my proposal. And at the time, I didn't know what issue I would choose. But I thought, well, I better get to Washington, D.C. because, you know, it's I want to get there and talk to people on the ground to choose the issue. I don't want to choose it from a distance. But I went in interested in two possible issues. One, gentrification, and that's because I'm working on that in Cincinnati, and it's one I care about and I'm interested in, and I know that there are many neighborhoods in D.C. that are changing. But I also went in thinking D.C. statehood might be interesting, and I wish I had a more interesting story about why that idea first came into my mind. I don't actually remember, or I can't really say any more than I thought, well, I know that's an issue, so maybe that would be something to look at. So early November, I went to Washington, D.C., and prior to getting there, set up some different meetings with local folks, set up meetings with Claire Cook, an organizer for One D.C., and Shaw, and with that, I was really talking with her about gentrification, but I also asked her about D.C. statehood, and she said some things that really stuck with me, one of which was, you know, I asked her, how does lack of D.C. statehood affect you and your organization, your organizing? And she said, well, for example, you know, maybe we'll be working on a campaign for a certain amount of city budget money for affordable housing development. And maybe we'll even win that campaign. But then the federal government could come in and change D.C.'s city budget. And as an organizer, I just thought, oh my goodness, that would just be terrible. That it's like organizing where your target is a ghost. Like it's there and it just could disappear. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And how's this for the perfect segue? Maria tells me that we have a guest on the line, and I think she's a community organizer.
Okay.
Anise, are you there?
I'm here. I'm listening to you all. Yes. Hi, Mary.
Hey, Anise. How are you?
Hi, Senator Brown.
Hi, Anise. Anise was involved in this project on the other end with you know, here in Washington. I was involved, and Anise was involved. And what's your question, or what do you want to say, Anise? We always want to hear from you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I just want to say I really think this was it was just inspirational. We were texting back and forth and just really excited about it. You know, we get excited when anybody outside of D.C. and inside is concerned about statehood. So the fact that she actually won the grant with that subject was exciting. And the fact that she was doing something creative and something totally new as far as, you know, I was concerned. I had never been on a walk that focused on an issue. It was just really exciting, and it gave us a voice. I mean, you know, we really felt that she gave the framework, but we said what we wanted to say. You know, we said why we were involved with statehood. We, you know, it was just really a framework so that we could voice our, so we could voice our plight. And it was great to have somebody from Ohio involved and people from around the country involved. And it was just exciting, very exciting.
Well, and you know, one thing, I mean, this is one reason that it's so important to have people like Mary Claire, not only because they're from outside the district and we really need to spread our message, but then she live streamed the whole thing. And, you know, right. This is technology that old guys like me don't use. I had a transistor radio. You know, I don't get live streaming. So, you know, it's great to have somebody that understands that technology and can use it to help us.
Well, I learned it for this project, Senator Brown. I'm right behind you with the technology thing. I had a transistor radio too. So, but I learned the technology with the support of the CAA committee, and that worked really well. I want to say that when I came to Washington D.C. back in November to do the research, I spoke with a number of different people. One of whom was Sonia Silbert at the Washington Peace Center. And she said, if you're thinking about doing the guided walk on statehood, you should talk to Anise Jenkins.
Yeah.
She is one of the, you know, longtime devoted activists and advocates, and you should absolutely talk with her. And then another funny thing happened. We were meeting with an artist, a D.C.-based artist there, Judy Byron, who came on the walk. My husband and I were having tea with her this Friday afternoon back in November. We leave her, we're walking down the street, and here comes this woman fully dressed in D.C. statehood garb. Red, white, and blue, asked me about D.C. statehood, I think her T-shirt said. And I said, do you mind if I just talk with you for a minute? And we struck up a conversation, and she also said, you need to talk to Anise Jenkins. So I reached out to Anise. And Anise and I really organized this thing together from a distance, you know, between Ohio and D.C. And she's right. Believe it or not, we did most of the organizing by text. I have never done that before. But it just worked for both of us. We're both busy people, and it just unfolded that way, and it worked great. But, you know, you asked me why I did this. I chose statehood in the end because two things. Again, as an outsider, it's absolutely appalling that this exists in the United States of America, that 672,000 United States citizens are disenfranchised. Absolutely unbelievable. And I don't think most people understand it. And I thought that this would be a wonderful opportunity for these people who are coming to this conference from outside of D.C., from all over the country, to have the opportunity to walk and learn with folks on the ground about the issue. And secondly, I felt like the D.C. statehood issue is a perfect and important lens through which you can look at almost any other issue that affects D.C. citizens, right? Because you look at housing and you see, okay, well, folks, it would be nice if they had a representative, a voting representative in the House or in the Senate to advocate for affordable housing, but they don't. If you look at health care, if you look at policing, any issue, you know, is it's just here we are with citizens who don't have the kind of access to a voting voice in Congress like the rest of us do.
That's absolutely the truth, and it's often missed on people. And that's one of the more interesting aspects of your project, as far as I was concerned, that you were dealing with it at the federal and local level, or at the, you know, citizen level, the activist level, because it affects us in different ways. And you know what I would have said to you if you came to me first? I would have said, you need to talk to Anise Jenkins, because
to Anise. Listen, but you know, I do want to thank the fact that other people got involved. We had, well,
yes,
of course, our organization, Stand Up for Democracy, but we had Royal Heights singing the D.C.
Yeah.
theme song. I mean, we had Joyce Robinson Paul, who talked as a mother and grandmother. We had Sherry. We just had people who were have been involved as long as I have, and people who really can voice what this oppression means to us. You know, the fact that we are in the nation's capital and aren't considered real citizens.
Yep.
So I think we need to take the show on the road. We need to take this out on the road, go from state to state, starting right here in D.C., and go to all 8 wards, gather our troops together, and take it on the road.
That's that would be interesting. That could be fun.
We need to go see Maria because she lives in Southern California. The weather's nice. Can you put us up, Maria? Uh-oh, we may have lost her. I don't know if we lost her there. It was so interesting. The project was so interesting.
It was. Okay, I'm going to get off the line. Maybe somebody else can get on.
Okay. All right, thanks again, East.
But thank you so much. And I have the link on our website too, freedc.org. So it's on Mary's website. Our website is on Facebook. You can see it if you missed it.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Too. Thanks, Anise. I don't know what's, we may have lost our connection. We've had a few Skype problems today with Maria. I hope we haven't lost her, but.
I'm here.
Oh, you are. I'm sorry, Maria.
That's okay.
I feel like we've cut you out of the conversation.
Yeah, I was like asking questions. I was like, well, I know that Anise had great things to say. And Mary Claire, my question to you is, who participated in the walk as wanting to be informed and guided by you and the folks that put it on?
Mary Claire?
Was that a question for me?
Yeah.
Sorry, I think I got cut out just for a sec.
Okay. I was curious who availed themselves of the walk that you had?
From the College Art Association? Or just, we had about 30 people go on the walk that day, and it was a nice mix of artists and other folks from the College Art Association conference and local D.C. Folks, including, I think, there were at least a couple of people who just saw, you know, the walk advertised somewhere. We had flyers out, and we had, you know, social media and stuff. So it was a nice mix that way. And we started at the Hirshhorn Museum out in the Sculpture Garden at Yoko Ono piece called Wish Tree for Washington, D.C. And I thought that would be a fitting place to start because it's so aspirational and, you know, D.C. statehood, the movement is all about hope and a future, you know, that we are hoping for and wanting. And then we left from there. We walked across 7th, if my memory serves me. And in view of the Capitol, what we did was I had prepared quotes from history and bits of the statehood legislation and news headlines and things. And I organized those so that every one of the participants in the guided walk got one. And then we actually performed these as we stood sort of, you know, facing the Capitol. They were in chronological order, and so it kind of told the story from 1801 when the constitutional, direction was made to create D.C. up to, as recent as Representative Norton taking Ted Cruz to task for having an agenda about your local education policy. So that was kind of an interesting way to perform that federal or policy level set of voices that has shaped the whole DC, you know, sort of disenfranchisement.
Well, you know, that's one of the things. I think you really opened a door here, because we're surrounded by these symbols of democracy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican or a Democrat, whether right. you want to go to the Jefferson Memorial and see we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal, or you want to walk over to our famous Republican monument to Abraham Lincoln, which says, you know, dedicated to the proposition that all are created equal. I mean, it's all over the place. And it appears to us, I think, as Washingtonians, how ironic that is. That
we have a caller, Michael, if you want to quick get Taboo on the line.
Sure. Taboo, what do you have to say?
Yeah, thank you. I'd really like to thank all of you, but I think this is we can kind of compare this to, you know, how we feel as a city, not having representation. You know, for Clara, for Mary, is Mary Claire?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you can kind of compare this to how people of pigmented complexion, or better known as colored people, black people, have felt all along in this country. You know, we've been treated as second classes. It's the same way people feel here in the city. So we've had corrupt government for a very long time. And I just want you to just kind of, you know, that might be a good comparison. When you talk about how people can live together, live side by side, but they don't really interact. So it's part of American culture.
Yes, we do have that. You know, even as a child of the 60s, when I went to the University of Maryland, you know, we were all about integration and love and peace and hugging everybody. But if you walked into the cafeteria, you'd find black people at one table and white people at another for the most part. And for the same reason, I think Mary Claire points out, we somehow didn't know how to transcend the space that was between us. So I think you're doing great, great stuff there, Mary Claire.
More inspirational work too. It's awesome that you had an idea, you got it approved, you executed it, and here you are to tell us about it. Thank you so much for providing a vision.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Mary Claire. Thank you for calling in. Our hour is up. I can't believe it went by so fast. Mary Claire is going to have to come back. One more time, Mary Claire, give us your website.
Okay, it's just MaryClaireReitz.com, and that's MaryClaireReitz. And thank you, Senator Brown, for your role in the Walk Beat. We love hearing from you as well.
Thanks so much. And thank you, Maria, as always. And we'll see you guys next week.
We sure will. Have a great week. Give the people their right to vote.